Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Saving money on your next project when you shop at Menards. We have everything you need for keeping your outdoor power equipment in tip-top shape. Ensure your lawnmower or boat is running smooth this year. Right now, all FVP lawn and garden and marine batteries are on sale. View our entire selection of FVP batteries today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of the great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Morning. You all right? Hope you can hear me. Let me know in the chat if you can hear me or not. Okay. It has just ticked past 8 in the a.m. British summer time on Thursday, the 9th of April in the year of our Lord, 2026. You are the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters, the very best among us, basically, to tune into Breakfast with Bo. Formerly known as Breakfast with Bo. Colloquially, the Bo Show, of course. Informally known as Bo's Breakfast Club. Don't you forget about me. Hashtag the real BBC. Low Caesar's Breakfast Club. Hashtag the real BBC. As every morning, I am joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning, yeah, I'm all good.
Good, good. Okay. I've got the chat here for once. Says loud and clear. Okay, good. Good. All right. Should we just go straight on with it? Should we get straight into it this morning? What is the legacy corporate mainstream media banging on about this morning? Are they trying to lie to you about by omission, if nothing else? That evil cabal of Fleet Street editors. Okay. It's more or less wall-to-wall Iran. More or less. Little bits and bobs here or there. I think the Star still talking about the Grand National. Okay, what have we got? Fragile ceasefire at risk, and Putin mocks Starmer. Only one of the papers goes with that, but there you go. Yeah, fragile ceasefire at risk, that's probably the biggest thing. That's the biggest story, isn't it, really? That the ceasefire that was brokered Tuesday night, early Wednesday morning, our time. It's not really holding yesterday. I said I didn't want to be a Debbie Downer about it, didn't I? I said I didn't want to be a pessimist about it, but I find it difficult to see if it will last beyond 2 weeks. It didn't last at all. It basically didn't last at all. I mean, before we get into the headlines, before the British print media headlines, let's just a quick look at, I think it was the Washington Post says it all. Yeah, okay. The Washington Post. Airstrikes turmoil in Strait of Hormuz imperils ceasefire with Iran. Iran accuses the US and Israel of violating the truce and threatened to withdraw from negotiations. Israeli attacks in Lebanon were a major point of dispute, and Iran conducts strikes in Persian Gulf and in retaliation. So there's still just missiles and bombs flying around all over the place, just still. Maybe not a huge, giant exchange between the United States and Iran, but there's no real ceasefire. Netty wasn't involved in the ceasefire deal, apparently. Trump didn't sort of ask him or anything or involve him, just expected him to completely fall in line. And so he's continuing bombing Lebanon, southern Lebanon, trying to take out Hezbollah. And that was one of Iran's points they wanted for that to stop. That's not stopped. Whether the Straits of Hormuz is truly open, remembering Trump's Truth Social post, he said it needs to be complete and immediate and sort of without condition, the strait open. Well, it's not. Iran said it's under conditions, our conditions. Some talk maybe of Iran even trying to take money off individual tankers before they're let through. But either way, Iran, in Iran's mind, collective mind, governmental mind, they think they still control it and it's going to remain that way. And that's not what the US thought the deal would be. I mean, it was pretty obvious, wasn't it, straight away that the US, whether it's the State Department or in Donald Trump's mind himself, and what the Iranians are saying and doing, they don't line up, do they? They don't marry up. So, okay. And there's more reasons, and there's more reasons. I guess we'll get into it over the hour or so. There's even more reasons why it's not working. Fragile ceasefire at risk. Yeah, really fragile. It's not really, well, in lots of senses, it's not a ceasefire. As I say, bombs and missiles are still flying all over the show. And Putin mocks Starmer. Okay, The Guardian. Ugh. The Guardian. Something about Jack Whitehall. Don't care. Idiot goon. Idiot establishment shield, Jack Whitehall. Don't care. Not funny. Fragile ceasefire at risk as Israel bombards Lebanon. There you go. So, I mean, that's the... There's a big picture of an explosion in process going on. Again, a nervous laugh there. Nervous laugh, that. Israel is not stopping. They're not stopping. But again, Trump did this, the thing like he did right at the beginning of the war. There's a parallel there, isn't it? Just thinking that what he says, or what he and Rubio and Hegseth say, the whole world will just immediately fall in line with that now. But no, you're not actual God Emperor, I'm afraid. Like, he wants to start the war with Israel and just expects all of NATO, Britain, France, Germany, to just immediately be on board 100% and just get behind it without no questions asked. No. He wants to make peace with Iran, immediately expects Israel to just 100% get in line, no questions asked. No. The whole world isn't his plaything, is it? All the people in the world aren't his to direct around a chessboard, is it? So, okay. At least 254 people killed in massive wave of airstrikes that level buildings in Beirut, Lebanon. In the news, there's various numbers. That's the highest one I saw, but a lot of them say 180, well over 100 people killed in just like the last day or so in Lebanon. Okay. I mean, Netanyahu said... We'll see. There's various things coming out, various different bits of reporting coming about Israel and Netanyahu. One says that he's like cautiously backs Trump's peace plan, but he's obviously not actually stopping bombing Lebanon, at least. He cautiously backs it. Another report I saw said that Netanyahu had said, we will get that enriched uranium, we will get that enriched uranium out of Iran, one way or another. A statement like that, like it's going to happen, whether we negotiate something with them and get them to dig it out and hand it over to us, unlikely, or we, Israel, unilaterally go in, like Israeli troops in Iran, digging it out. That was a sort of statement he made, now like a sort of a categorical, this will happen sort of thing. I think regardless of what the White House want or think. So, but then another report is that he's cautiously backing Mr. Trump's peace proposal. You know, so it's not entirely clear. Okay. The Guardian continues by saying, differing versions of agreement leave confusion and fear in Middle East. Yeah, basically, it's as simple as this, isn't it? The Iranian 10-point plan, things they want, insist upon, are not in line with what the US and Israel want, demand. It's kind of as simple as that, isn't it? Okay, the Financial Times. Israeli hit on Lebanon threatens truce. Well, yeah, makes a mockery of it, basically. At least in Iran's mind, makes a mockery of it. Iran's like, all right, well, that was one of our points. It's immediately been broken. So that's that. You can imagine in the minds of whoever's leading in Iran. Still haven't seen the Ayatollah, have we? Pretty sure we haven't. I haven't seen any reports of that he's actually come out. Even just on a recording, let alone live. Okay. Is there an Ayatollah? That report the Iranians, that statement the Iranians released on, what was it, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, saying we will do a ceasefire if you do a ceasefire, that was released in the name of their foreign minister, wasn't it? So the equivalent of Marco Rubio or Yvette Cooper. Yvette Cooper. Mrs. Ed Balls. Okay. No one's listening to her, are they? Was it in the... Was it in the BBC? Was it? It was somewhere. Yeah, look, on Sky News, for example. Yvette Cooper there. Does anyone in this thing, the real players in this thing, the real players at the heart of power in Iran, Israel, United States, Saudi Arabia, whatever, Russia, China, does anyone care what Yvette Cooper says? Ed Balls' wife. Foreign Secretary, our Foreign Secretary, UK Foreign Secretary, calls for Straits of Hormuz to reopen. Does she? Does she? And she rules out tolls on shipping. Does she? Does she? That is laughable, isn't it? Do you know what it reminds me of a little bit? Have you ever seen a mass brawl in a bar or on the street late at night? Like 10, 15 blokes, one big maelstrom of fighting, a big brawl. And there's someone's girlfriend in the middle, some little like 5'3", 110 pound girl in the middle, screeching, going, no, don't, it's not worth it, don't. No one's listening to her, are they? No one. No one's even recognising that she's there. That's what I feel like Yvette Cooper is like. All right, should we get back to the papers? Okay, Israel hit on Lebanon, threatens truce. Tehran halts Strait traffic after attack on Hezbollah. Yeah, so, okay, the key question, is the Straits of Hormuz open, sort of the way the Americans wanted it, the way Trump wanted it, just complete and utter, immediately, 100%, like it was the day before this war started? No, it's not. No, it's not. And even if Iran are letting certain ships through under certain conditions, which they are, so it's open to some extent, some degree, if they're letting some ships through, it's a whole different question. I think I said it yesterday. It's a whole different issue, isn't it, to those individual shipping companies and the actual crew of those ships feeling that they're safe and that the insurance companies like Lloyd's of London, although there are many others, them being comfortable with insuring ships to go through there. That's something entirely different, isn't it? So even though the Strait is nominally open to a degree at the moment, the actual shipping going through there is minimal. It's not nothing, but it's minimal. So did Trump get what he wanted, what was supposed to be his line in the sand, a completely open Straits of Hormuz? No, he hasn't. He didn't. So is this 2-week ceasefire, double-sided ceasefire, is it going to last even 2 weeks? Well, it already hasn't, has it? Come on. This ceasefire thing is kind of shown to be a bit of a farce now, I think, already, right? I mean, well, Hegseth came out yesterday, I believe it was yesterday, did a press conference, came out and said it was just declared victory. He said, like, in emphatic terms as well, just said it's a complete and utter victory. A victory with a capital V. That's what he said. If I was ever in government during a wartime in one way or another, I would reserve formally declaring victory, until it was absolutely 1,000% obviously the reality. I wouldn't do it until then. There's the classic thing, isn't there, of George Bush Jr., George W., declaring victory in Iraq. And although they thought, well, as far as they were concerned, it was operationally a military victory, the actual thing, the actual campaign, was nowhere near finished. There's years and years and years more of it, and a whole sectarian bloodbath yet to go. And so people, his political enemies, can point back at that clip of him standing on an aircraft carrier or a destroyer or whatever it was, with a big banner behind him, mission accomplished, and him saying, mission accomplished, we've won, it's all finished. They can point to that and say, what an embarrassment. How sad. Like, this is... So they can do a bit... They can already, one day later, do that with that Hegseth clip, can't they? Capital V, victory. Don't call victory too soon, I would say. Don't count your chickens till they're hatched. All right. Move comes one day after Trump announces ceasefire. US and Islamic Republic poised for talks tomorrow. Apparently J.D. Vance, Kushner and Witkoff are going to go over, I think to Pakistan, sit down with some Iranian officials and try and hash something out. I haven't got any real confidence that that will come to anything. They've tried that a number of times, haven't they? Both sides, particularly the Iranian side, but both sides really use that as just a bargaining tool to buy time and to try to bamboozle their opponent politically in various ways. I don't think either side are serious about actually just getting a full peace. At this stage, I mean. Markets register gains after advances in diplomacy. So it's already a little bit out of date because markets have dropped again since then. Equities, commodities, currencies, bonds. As for the oil price, should we have a look at the oil price in real time? We do that, don't we, on the Bo Show? Let's have a quick look. What have we got? Just shy of $100 a barrel still. So a little bit higher than yesterday, but not a fantastic amount. About the same as yesterday, a couple of dollars more. West Texas, $97. Brent, just shy of $97. Okay, all the greens, though, going up. But not going up sharply. It's a little bit less volatile than it has been over the last 3, 4, 5 weeks. At the moment. Because it dipped loads yesterday off the back of this ceasefire announcement. Dipped quite a lot. It's like among the all-time biggest dips in one day yesterday. And it's gone up a tad since then. But it hasn't shot through the roof again, has it? At this point. And what all that means for how much you actually pay for gasoline or diesel at the petrol pump in real life, that's something else entirely, isn't it? Okay, that's the Financial Times. The normal venerable times. What have we got? Airstrikes risk blowing fragile ceasefire apart. So that is the main story today. It's what they're all going with. Deal under strain. That's putting it mildly, isn't it? The deal is under strain as Israel bombs Lebanon. Trump to discuss pulling US out of NATO. That's the other big thing. Mark Rutte, you know, the head of NATO. He went to the White House yesterday. He had like a meeting with the Donald. Behind closed doors, though, it's entirely private. He was in the White House for about 2 hours. We don't know if the majority of that 2 hours was sitting down with Trump himself, but he was in and out of the White House within about 2 hours. He came out and he just said, obviously he doesn't give away everything they're saying. I mean, it's sensitive military stuff ultimately, isn't it? But he said they had a very frank conversation. And Donald Trump himself talking about, again, making noises about how he is looking at thinking about leaving NATO. Well, I'm one of those people, I'm sure everyone watching this won't agree with me, even lots of people in the chat today won't agree with me. I think a fair few would, but not everyone will agree with the take I'm about to say, but I don't care. I would like America to leave NATO and the whole thing to fall apart. I think NATO destabilises the world and Europe in various ways. There you go. I mean, countries like Lithuania, Estonia, right, Finland, Poland, Belarus, maybe, most affected. From my point of view, it's just a tool for US hegemony and it destabilises things. It's just, I feel like it's a relic of the Cold War, NATO. I feel like it made sense in 1946 or whatever, like it made sense all through the 50s and even the 60s, but by the 1990s, even after the fall of the Berlin Wall, let's say that, in 1989, doesn't make sense. Why we've still got NATO in like the year 2005? Why we've still got it today? Don't know. If there was some sort of, I really don't see it happening, but if Putin decided he was going to invade Belarus or Poland or the plains of Eastern Germany, well, then there would be an effort made at that point, wouldn't there? I mean, it's taken him years to barely take a third of Ukraine or the Donbass region. I don't see him Soviet style, 1950s Soviet style, trying to invade Eastern and Central Europe. But if he did, there would be a whole diplomatic and military thing at that point, wouldn't there? Why you have to have NATO sitting there the whole time? I don't know. I'm personally just not worried or scared about the United States pulling out of NATO and then NATO probably almost essentially collapsing. Either entirely collapsing or just becoming a tiny, tiny shadow of what it once was. It's okay. Yeah, rework the balance of power sometimes. You don't have to have the status quo as it existed in 1945 forever. Right? US bases in Germany just forever now. Really? Do we? I don't know. FD have come out and said they don't want American bases in Germany anymore. I mean, it was like 80 years ago now. Isn't it? All right. All right, the Mirror. Let's have a look at the Mirror. They're going with the Grand National. Cracks in ceasefire deal. Got a screenshot of Trump pulling a slightly odd face. TDS is mad, isn't it? Okay. This is a picture from Beirut, I believe, is it? Yeah. A few hundred people killed in Beirut. Or within 10, apparently something in the order of 100 Israeli missiles hit Beirut in the window of 10 minutes yesterday. And still it goes on. That's the headline. That's the headline from the Mirror. Cracks in ceasefire deal and still it goes on. Iran's threat over Strait of Hormuz after brutal new Israeli strikes in Lebanon. Yeah, some are saying that the Iranians are going to want payment from individual ships. At first I saw yesterday saying they want $1 million per ship. Now they're saying $2 million per ship. And they're saying, oh, you can pay in cryptocurrency. That sort of says to me that they're not entirely serious about, because some big, massive companies will be able to afford that, at least for a while. Many won't, many can't. Many, that effectively means it's still shut to them, right? It's not like every single oil tanker and oil tanker company has got endless resources, right? They've got a bottom line like everyone else. If they have to pay $2 million per ship every time, well, they very, very, very quickly, if not immediately, becomes not doable. So it's effectively closed in that sense then. The Daily Mail, they go, okay. Iran emboldened, Strait Hormuz still shut with Tehran demanding tolls. They characterise it as it's shut. It is just still shut. More attacks on Gulf states and Lebanon. Despite all Trump's crowing, the world mocks. A bizarre kind of victory. That's the headline. A bizarre kind of victory. That's what I was saying, wasn't I, when Hegseth went out and said victory with a capital V. But yet, like the Mail Group, without diverting too far from reality, are able to characterise it as a bizarre kind of victory. I mean, if America's war aims was to, one, remove the regime, like actually not just kill everyone at the top and they're replaced by new people, but fully, fully change that regime. Well, they haven't done that. If it was to get all the enriched uranium, they haven't done that. If it was then, during this war, to have the Straits of Hormuz opened, they haven't achieved that. I mean, again, you can characterise it in a few different ways, but the Mail says that the Strait just isn't open. Still shut, sorry, they say. So, how is it a victory exactly? Pete? Hegseth? How? Okay, you like he said in his press conference yesterday, I watched it, like saying, you know, we've decimated their military. I mean, decimation is only 1 in 10, but he probably meant it. Like, almost destroyed, I think, is what he meant by that word. But anyway, okay. You've pretty much destroyed their air force. They didn't have any much to begin with anyway, but you've destroyed that and sent nearly all their navy to the bottom of the sea. Okay, They've destroyed their ability to launch missiles to an extent because they are still launching them. But okay, you've taken loads of those out. I can believe that. Sure. You've blown up, killed, murdered loads of their leadership. Loads of them. Yeah, okay. Okay, yep, done that. What else, though? That's it, though, isn't it, really? So... If someone said to me, you have to characterise it as either a complete victory with a capital V or a bizarre kind of victory, and it's a binary choice, you can only pick one of those two things, I would say, yeah, it's more of a bizarre kind of victory than it is just a total win, the way Pete Hegseth described it. All right. This kid's 21. It seems to be very, very middle-class kid, living in Primrose Hill, a very expensive, nice part of London. On a nice sunny day yesterday, went up to Primrose Hill, went up to the park there. Lovely spot in London, absolutely lovely spot. Just to take some photos. It's just a 21-year-old trying out his camera. Somehow got in a fight with a bunch of black kids and they stabbed him to death. There you go. That's Blair's Britain. Great. That's Cameron's Britain for you. The Independent. Oh, what's that? Some Iranian people burning an Israeli flag? US, Iran, quote, begged, quote, for truce and must dig up hidden uranium. See, there you go. Classic in a nutshell, right? That's what the US say. That's what they want. Iran are not going to do that. They're not going to do that, are they? If they do dig it up, they're not just going to immediately hand it over to the IAEA or some Navy SEALs that are going to Black Hawk it out of the country. No. Well, I doubt it. I highly doubt it. Iran begged for truce and must dig up hidden uranium. White House declares capital V for military victory with 2 weeks ceasefire. Any new peace deal will require Tehran to hand over buried nuclear material. I don't see that happening. I really don't. Trump claims he's agreed joint venture with Iran to reopen Strait of Hormuz. Again, you see the divergence between what Trump wants and thinks and what Iran wants and thinks. I don't think Iran have got any intention of doing any sort of joint venture. We might see over the course of today or the next day or week, it might emerge that, in fact, some deal like that is in place. At the moment, because we can only, we don't know the future, do we? It's not yet written. At the moment, as of the morning of the 9th, Thursday the 9th, doesn't look like that's a realistic thing, does it? Israel says deal doesn't include Lebanon. Iran says it does, though. Iran wants it to, though. And launches huge deadly strikes. Okay. You get it. How many times can I labour? Don't need to labour the point really much anymore, do I? That this ceasefire isn't really much of a ceasefire. The Metro, ugh. The Metro. So weary. I've got Metro fatigue. After 40 years of chaos, is it really peace? They ask. This headline this morning, I had to read it two or three times before I could even gather what they were trying to get at. Look, oil over bar the shouting. Oil over bar the shouting. Well, there was a comma there, and you realise it's a pun. It should be all. Because oil and all rhyme, don't they? So it should be all over, comma, bar the shouting. All over, bar the shouting. But they've just written oil over, bar the shouting. Okay, good one. Good headline. Trump's war chief, Pete Hegseth, boasts of a victory with a capital V after Iran begged for a ceasefire. Okay. Energy prices fall. See when they go to print on these things. Energy prices fall as world welcomes deal. But Tehran threatens ships and Israel fights on. I think it's going to be the case that whatever Trump and Rubio and Hegseth want or demand, Israel and Iran are going to keep doing what they want. what they think are in their best interests. And maybe a lot of the other countries as well, like Saudi or something. A lot of the other countries. They're going to keep doing what they want, I would have thought, largely. Certainly Iran. At some point, with enough pressure and talking, the United States might get Israel to fall in line with exactly what it wants. Maybe, eventually. Not Iran, though. Okay, the Sun. Fleecing our time. Get it? Because fleece and peace do kind of rhyme, don't they? Fleecing our time. Fleecing someone. Stealing from someone to fleece them. Fleecing our time. Iran opens shipping toll booths in peace deal. Quote, peace deal. That's the story that you're saying, that the Ayatollah, if he's even alive, if he's in a coma, or the Ayatollah, or rather just the Iranians, some reports, want up to $2 million per ship. Again, effectively closing it to a lot of shipping, one way or another. Fleecing our time. Brits face months of high bills and a pumps hell. Petrol pumps. Whether this fleece will be a joint US venture. Trump says he wants it to be like a joint US venture, but it's not clear, is it? It's all a bit up in the air, isn't it? There's nothing clear about all of this, particularly, is there? All right, the eye paper. What have we got in the eye paper? UK Minehunter drones to protect oil in Hormuz. Are they now? But fuel bills set to stay higher. I'll quickly read the blurb, because it's more about Britain and the British government. Prime Minister stepping up work on reopening Gulf. Again, like I said earlier about Yvette Cooper. Same applies for Keir Starmer, doesn't it, really? Keir Starmer's going to start working really hard. He's going to step up efforts to make any difference. Actually, physically, in the Straits of Hormuz. But okay, Prime Minister, quote, stepping up, quote, work on reopening Gulf oil and gas shipping route after US and Iran agree fragile ceasefire in bid to offset further shock to world energy markets. He's not going to do jack, is he? He's not going to achieve jack. Are we going to send Minehunter drones? Are we? I believe it when I see it. And when we do, it'll be a very, very small token effort, won't it? Okay. Starmer faces warnings that the UK is still at risk of economic turmoil, with Think Tank calling for a plan to help Britain's ration energy and fuel as suppliers continue to be choked. Great. Oh, good. Fuel rationing in Britain in the 2020s. Because of Operation APAC Fury. Epic Fury, APAC Fury. Bibi's War. 2-week truce in doubt as Israel unleashes heaviest attack of war so far in Lebanon, and Iran halts oil tankers and threatens retaliation over alleged ceasefire breach. Iran war has exposed how Royal Navy has been, quote, cut beyond the bone, quote, experts say. Yeah. Sorry, the writing's so small there. That's right at the limit of my increasingly dwindling 2020. I haven't got 2020 anymore. Probably should get lenses or glasses at some point soon. It's only a shade off of what it always used to be, but it's definitely... All right, anyway. That's my problem, isn't it? All right, the Daily Telegraph. Daily Telegraph. This is that story about how Putin's mocking Starmer. Oh, sorry, it's right there, isn't it? Putin mocks Starmer in channel. And that's that he's sending through Russian tankers, oil tankers, or even ghost ones. That's what they call them, don't they? Or Russian zombie tankers, Russian ghost tankers. And sometimes we've boarded them. We've sent Royal Marines or the SBS to just board them and take them. This is like in the North Sea and in the English Channel and stuff. So now they're escorting it with an actual Russian warship to stop us doing that. So if we wanted to do that again, we'd probably have to engage that warship. And then what? And then we're at war with Russia. A couple of things go wrong there. It's a nuclear holocaust. Bit worrying, isn't it? Makes you think if the bellicose war hawks, the massively anti-Russian war hawks in the British establishment, will they actually get what they want, or what they seem to want, a war with Russia? Because if they wanted to at this point, right, if they wanted to, they could engage that ship and board this ship. And then the ball's back in the Kremlin's court. What now? What are you going to do now? All that, like, really? Really, you're going to start a war with Russia? They have still got the biggest nuclear arsenal in the world. Tens of thousands of nukes. And we've got nukes as well. Bit worrying. Okay, billionaire expat moves back home to hand £4 million to reform. Yeah, this is a story of a guy, what's his name, Ben something. Self-made billionaire, apparently. I never heard of him before, but he's moved back to Britain and he's going to give reform £4 million for their war chest. There you go, good. Well, not great, but because I'm a restore person, but good for them, good for them. You know, still, despite being a restore partisan, I would rather reform do well than the Lib Dems or Labour or Conservative, of course. Ideally, I'd like to see, I know it's a bit blue sky thinking, but I'd like to see Restore as the government and Reform as the opposition. Lib Dem, Labour, Tory are just a couple of guys up in the corner where the independents sit with a couple of SNP dudes up there. And no one really listens to them. That would be ideal, wouldn't it? That would be the type of parliament I'd like to see. All right. Iran threatens to restart war over Lebanon bombardment. Oh, both sides have threatened to restart the war. Trump has said a whole bunch of times already. Oh, we're keeping all our military and navy in place. Like, this is just a 2-week ceasefire at the moment. It's not like we're just leaving the region. Everything's going to stay in place. Absolutely everything. And he also said explicitly, if Iran, as far as he's concerned, cross any red lines, it's straight on immediately. Straight back on immediately. And Iran threatening the same thing. I don't see this thing lasting very long. The ceasefire, I mean. Don't see that lasting very long. The Express, it's a good baby. Being ironic there, for anyone's watching the Bow Show for the first time, it's not a good paper. That's an Alan Partridge quote. It's a ridiculous rag. Look at this picture. This is so infuriating to any sort of patriot, anyone who doesn't want their country and society to be ripped apart. What an infuriating thing. That's a beach in France, just across the channel. There's a whole bunch of foreign invaders, economic migrants, unvetted fighting age men. God knows who they are, what their past is, what's in their hearts and minds. No one knows. No idea. All he knows is that they're trying to break the law by getting into Britain illegally. We've paid the French authorities hundreds and hundreds of millions of pounds over years to do something, to do anything to stop them, to even lower the numbers a bit, anything. No, they just stand there. Look, there you go. Just standing there. Just watching them do it. Right. Headline is Destination El Dorado, UK. El Dorado, a fabled city of gold. It's a destination for these people because they'll get far more benefits. They'll get treated far better in the UK than anywhere else in Europe. They'll just be given loads and loads and loads of things. Least of all, a roof over their head. And almost certainly not deported. Almost certainly. Not certainly, but. So it's the best place to get to. Is the UK. It's not enough. Say they've come from Vietnam. As far away as Vietnam. Bangladesh. Pakistan. Iraq, Iran, Syria, Nigeria. Anywhere in sub-Saharan Africa. Wherever they've come from. The place where they can get the most gibs is the UK. So it's not good enough that they're in France. It's not good enough for them. Already in France. Nope. They need to get across the channel. And the French police just watch them. Just stand there and watch them. It's infuriating. And we've tried to do a new deal. Shabana Mahmood, our Home Secretary, who I don't believe for an instant has got any intention of truly stopping this or wanting to. She's tried to make some sort of new deal, slightly stronger deal with the French. And the French have rejected that, even rejected that. So, the Star, something about the Grand National, don't even care. Don't care. Red Roma, very, very famous racehorse winner. Its trainer, his grandson, is now a jockey, going to be in the Grand National on Saturday. Okay, don't care. Let's move on. The BBC goes all with... let's do the poll. We do the poll at this point, don't we? We do the poll. Harry, can you bring that up on my screen for me? So we asked you guys, just shy of 1,200 votes, we asked you guys, do you think the ceasefire will hold? 6% of you say yes. 80% say no. And 14% say maybe. All I know is my gut says maybe. 80% though. It's a stonking win, effectively, isn't it? It doesn't seem likely. Or it just already has fallen apart, isn't it? 6-7. The yes just ticked up to 7% there. Contrarians and trolls to a man, I imagine. But don't go. Don't leave me. I didn't mean it. Okay, let's have a look at the websites. Okay, the BBC just goes with all the Iran things. Here you can see a quick snapshot of everything they're going with. Trump says US forces will stay in region until Iran fully complies with, quote, real agreement, quote, the real agreement in their mind. And they're not going to. They haven't already, and they're not going to, are they, realistically? So everything stays in place. There you go. Jeremy Bowen, a BBC correspondent, famous one. Ceasefire means respite for civilians, but it might not last long. Trump criticises NATO as alliance chief, describes meeting as very frank. Negotiators face huge tasks to close gaps in rival Iran peace proposals. Huge gaps, yeah. Giant chasms. Even if Iran war ends now, farmers' costs will have to be passed on. Iran warning adds to shipping uncertainty. All right. There you go. That's a bit of a snapshot of it. In the ITV news, there was one... Oh, yeah, there we go. There's the Israeli angle real quick. Netanyahu cautiously supports Iran ceasefire as criticisms within Israel grow. But as I say, other reports have said he's just completely adamant that Iran won't be able to retain its currently buried enriched uranium. And he would have been aware, wouldn't he? You would have thought that it was one of Iran's red lines to stop bombing Lebanon, which he stepped up, if anything, in the last 24 hours, didn't he? We had a report a moment ago saying it was the largest bombardment of missiles of ordnance into Lebanon from Israel since the war started. So Netanyahu, in one sense, cautiously supports Iran's ceasefire, and in another sense, absolutely doesn't in any way, shape, or form. Okay. Sky News, and we had a quick look. Yvette Cooper. Completely impotent Yvette Cooper screaming into the void. Oh, there's a story of that 21-year-old who just got stabbed in a park. Do you think he started it? He started the knife fight? Finbar Sullivan of Primrose Hill. I doubt it. I don't know the details of that fight, of course, because they haven't been reported on. You know how it goes, don't you? They're really, really, really aggressive. Really aggressive. And one way or another, over nothing. Force your hand to say or do anything back. Suddenly you're in a fight now. Suddenly you're just in a fight over nothing. Try and fight back. Oops, you just got stabbed. May or may not be a fatal stabbing. on Primrose Hill. Thanks, Blair. Thanks, Cameron. Thanks, Boris. Thanks, Rishi. Thanks, Starmer. That's our Britain now. Brilliant. Trump warns of bigger and stronger strikes on Iran unless a deal agreement is reached. See, it's all... It's still on, isn't it? As Tehran insists Israeli attacks on Lebanon must end. They're not going... Israel not going to do that, are they? I don't think. They might do, but I don't think so. I don't think so. All right. Another report there. Nigel gets a bunch more money for his war chest. Okay. Trump promises to destroy Iran in furious statement as ceasefire falls apart in 24 hours. See, so they're prepared to describe it as it has fallen apart. Starmer's small boat crisis deepens as 2026 migrants, as this year's migrants crossings top 5,000. Yeah, look at this. Look at them. These are not like refugees, are they, that are fleeing persecution from their countries? Some of them may be. The vast majority of them won't be, will they? The vast majority of them are economic migrants, are chancers. And unvetted. That's sort of the most terrifying thing, isn't it? Unvetted. Coming here for gibs and to commit theft and or sex crime. Or even worse, violent crime. Murders, whatever. His name was Wayne Broadhurst. Could be stopped in an afternoon. Deploy a 4-2 commando. Could be stopped basically immediately, within one day. Stopped, dead. Not one more. Not one man more. Making the decision every day to not do that, aren't they? Every single day. The decision is taken to not act. What other conclusion can you come to than they want it? Our government want this. What other conclusion can you come to? They could stop it immediately. Almost immediately. Stop it dead in its tracks. All right, a little bit about... Oh, it's nearly quarter to you. A little bit about Artemis. They should be coming back in, what, the next 2 days, is it? Next 2 days. And as I said before, and as everyone says, who knows anything about it, it's the most dangerous part of the mission by far, is re-entry into Earth's atmosphere. How on Earth? Inside Artemis's perilous 16-minute plunge back to Earth, where astronauts face 2,760 degrees Celsius heat with just a 3-inch shield. 2,760 degrees. 25,000 miles per hour. Not kilometres now, miles per hour. There we go, look. Orion and European Service Module, the ESM, separate, travelling at just shy of 25,000 miles per hour. It's difficult to fathom how fast that is. Right? That's difficult to fathom that. Like 1,000 miles per hour is slower than like a bullet, like a 9mm pistol bullet. I think even like a decent rifle. I think I've watched a fair few videos before about, loads of videos actually before about ballistics. I think a very, very good rifle, like a 308 or a 50 cal or something, I think that bullet will go faster than 1,000 miles per hour, or is it 1,000 feet per second? They usually measure it in feet per second actually, though, don't they? Anyway, 25,000 miles per hour is way, 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 way faster than any rifle bullet. I mean, many times faster. It's an insane speed, 25,000 miles per hour. It's sort of insane. It's sort of very, very difficult to comprehend. Okay, and they'll enter Earth's atmosphere at that speed. And then Orion, the little module thing, that the four people are in that, four people will be inside that. It fires thrusters, turning its heat shield, the bottom bit, towards the atmosphere. And then you just sit tight and hope you don't burn up, break apart, burn up. And just the atmosphere itself will break it down to 300 miles per hour. Then they shoot their, then they fire their chutes, their drogue, their parachutes. It'll slow them down to about 30, 20-30 mile per hour, and then they drop in the ocean and are picked up. It floats and they're picked up. If you believe any of this is real and it's not all just a soundstage in Texas somewhere or California, which I think you would be mad to think that. I honestly do think you're failing to understand reality properly if you think all of NASA and space is just phony and fake. It's just me. All right, that's just me. New York Times, more about Iran. Okay, we've done that a bit. I do like to just check in with Le Monde most mornings, just to check in. Yep, Lebanon's sectarian tensions rise. We must stand united or we are heading for civil war, Lebanon. That's what happens if you let a giant Muslim majority into your country. It ends in complete civil war and chaos, destabilization, misery, death, etc., 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 etc. It's absolutely insane and suicidal to let millions of Muslims come to Western non-Muslim countries. A sectarian nightmare. It's not just, you know, it's not just a far-right fantasy. It's not just some sort of crazy right-wing racist bigot thing to think or say. It's obviously true. It's obviously reality. How many times does it have to play out in the world? You have a non-Muslim country and you let enough Muslims in, it becomes a nightmare sectarian situation once there's enough of them. Because it's a proselytizing religion, conquering religion. It wants you to submit. Islam, at its core, wants you, whoever you are, everyone, to submit to it. It demands submission and is prepared to fight for it. So either submit or be prepared to fight back. It's one of those two things. I mean, we know Nigel Al-Farage, we know he does want to capitulate to it effectively, right? Didn't he say, quote, if we alienate Islam, we lose, quote. No, did he not say that? That's defeatist, that's slave talk as far as I'm concerned. That's disgusting, that's not what I want. That's not what we need in government. That's terrible. That's moral and political cowardice, nothing more. He's terrified. Not good enough. I won't submit. I will not submit. All right. Shall we have a look at this day in history? Shall we have a look at that? Quick look at that. I like doing that segment at the end of the show. You guys seem to like it. Down through the centuries, on this day, the 9th of April, what happened of note? Let's take a look. All right. On this day, the 9th of April, in the year 1483, Edward V, a child, it says that, age 12, succeeds his father, Edward IV, this son of York, Edward IV, the eldest son of Richard, Duke of York, who won the Wars of the Roses. He succeeds his father, who just died of natural causes. He was a bit corpulent, and he died relatively young. So his dad, Edward IV, dies, and even though he's age 12, he immediately becomes the king. That's how that works. Your coronation is just a rubber stamp. The moment the old king is dead, the next in line is the king. So Edward V, a 12-year-old, is now king. But he is never crowned. And he disappears. Just never seen from again. Presumed murdered after being incarcerated in the Tower of London along with his younger brother, Richard. The two princes in the tower. So, actually, on Epochs, Harry, at the moment, Harry, on my history theme show, Epochs, behind the paywall, consider going over to lotuseaters.com for as little as £5 a month, become a Bronze Tier membership. On that show, I'm going through a series of the Wars of the Roses at the moment, the entire Wars of the Roses. At the moment, we're just up to the bit where the king before Edward IV, Henry VI, a Lancastrian, has just been murdered, making Edward IV's reign safe, effectively. That's where we are in the story. And this is in the next episode or two, I'll be talking all about this. But of course, it's a very, very famous bit of English history. The princes in the tower. Many say that Edward, the 12-year-old Edward the Fifth, and his little brother Richard were put in the tower by their own uncle, evil Uncle Richard the Third. We don't know exactly. It's sort of a mystery. I don't think it's much of a mystery. When you look at the actual accounts from the time, it's not really a mystery. But people like to make out it's a mystery. It's not really. But what you can say for 100% sure, 100% historical fact, they went into that tower, apparently for their own good, called into Uncle Richard, and were just never seen again. It's a story as old as time. Extra princes, quite often, find themselves in an early grave. Whether Richard himself personally murdered them, smothered them or something, probably not, but we don't know. We just don't know. What we know for sure is that they were never seen again after a certain point. They were in the tower. Sometimes people would see them playing around and frolicking on the green. They were still alive. And then at a certain point, just, they're gone. They're gone. Leaving the throne open for Uncle Richard, who then got his ass handed to him by Henry Tudor at the field, Bosworth Field, and himself killed. Okay, we'll get into all that on Epochs over the coming few weeks, if you're interested in that. Great story. All right, on this day in 1731, British mariner Robert Jenkins's ear is cut off by a Spaniard in the Caribbean, and it's a catalyst for a later war between Britain and Spain. That's how we used to roll. You mutilate one of our sailors, that's it, it's war. There's much more to it than that, politics. We were sort of global rivals, Britain and Spain, of course, in the early 18th century and after. So it's really just a casus belli, a reason to go to war. But there's the whole War of Jenkins' Ear. If you're interested, there'll be YouTube videos, there's a wiki page, the War of Jenkins' Ear. Like, we wanted to go to war with Spain, so we're looking for anything they might do where we can go, oh, right, that's it, that's war now. And this happened to be what it was. The War of Jenkins' Ear, there we go. On this day in 1768, John Hancock, the first signature on the Declaration of Independence, John Hancock, an American, refuses to allow two British customs agents to go below the deck of his ship, considered by some to be the first act of physical resistance to British authority in the colonies. The 13 US colonies, that is. John Hancock, look at the date there, 1768. So 1776 is the beginning of the war, so many, many years before that. People don't say it much anymore, but people used to say, well, some people know that your John Hancock is shorthand for your signature. Someone might give you a bit of paper to sign. They say, go on, put your John Hancock there. Why do they do that? It's because, as I said, John Hancock is the first signature. Before George Washington, before John Adams, before Thomas Jefferson, John Hancock was like, I'll sign it. Let me sign it first. I hate the English the most. John Hancock. If you're an American, because I'm an Anglo-American, basically, aren't I? My father's an American, full-blown American. Tons of cousins in America. If you're an American, John Hancock's... He's great, isn't he? He's one of your boys. Love it. As an Englishman, an arch traitor. All right. Okay. On this day in 1865, Confederate General Granny Lee, Bobby E. Lee. Granny, by the way, isn't a criticism before you get worried about it. That's what they called him, and he liked being called that. Because he looked after them like a grandmother. He loved his own men so much. He was like this white-haired, grandmotherly figure. He will look after you. He will try and keep you alive with everything he's got. Granny Lee. It's not a criticism. Confederate General Robert E. Lee and 26,765 troops surrender at Appomattox Courthouse in the US to Lieutenant General Ulysses S. Grant, ending the Civil War in Northern Virginia. Most people say that that's the end of the Civil War, and it largely was, but not entirely. There was some sporadic fighting still for a while after that, but in essence, essentially, that's the end of the American Civil War. General Lee realised that he could go on fighting to the last man, but there's just absolutely no point in that. The Yankees had gotten them effectively surrounded. There was no point. There's literally no strategic or tactical point trying to fight on any longer. Do you think I've got long form content about that sort of thing? It's actually not on Epochs, it's on my own channel, History Bro. Did a very long form bit of content with Benjamin Boyce, the great Benjamin Boyce. All about the entire life and career of Ulysses S. Grant. Not just his war career, but his early life, his war career. And then he went on to be president, didn't he? And then his life after being president, the whole thing. Long form bit of content. I think it's, is it in the 3 hour ballpark or more? Oh, anyway, got a very, very long video on Ulysses S. Grant. If you want to hear me talking about Ulysses S. Grant and, of course, the Civil War in loads of, quite a lot of detail, check it out. It's all free over at History Bro. Nothing's behind a paywall there. Benjamin Boyce, great dude. Great dude, isn't he? A great listener. A great spirit. Okay, on this day in 1869, Hudson's Bay Company cedes its territory to Canada. I've mentioned Hudson's Bay Company before, haven't I? I think I have. People think there's like the Honourable East India Company was one of the only type of these 18th, 19th century companies that go around the world effectively doing conquest. Well, there's loads. All different countries, all different types. South Sea Company. Anyway, Hudson's Bay Company. Finally, in the end, got to just give everything over to Canada. The story of the Hudson Bay Company is interesting. Okay. In 1992, John Major is elected Prime Minister of the United Kingdom after his Conservative Party wins the most votes in British electoral history. Which is funny and interesting because he didn't get a big majority. It's often the way, isn't it? Well, not often, but quite, it can be the way, not just in the United Kingdom, in any vote, that you can win sort of the popular vote, just the sheer number of votes you get from people, and yet that doesn't necessarily translate into a very, very strong government. So he had a very small majority, I believe, in 1992, very small. Very, very small. No one thought John Major would take over from Margaret Thatcher, did they? He wasn't sort of... They thought it would be Michael Heseltine, didn't they? Including Michael Heseltine. Everyone thought that if and when Maggie is ousted or loses, Michael Heseltine is the heir apparent. It's going to be Heseltine. Well, when it came down to it, John Major had a bigger faction in the party and took over. Didn't call a general election right away, the way Theresa May did, but didn't call it right away, like Rishi did. When there was finally an election, everyone thought Neil Kinnock could win in 1992. There's no way John Major is going to beat Neil Kinnock in 1992 after, what, 12 years, 13 years of Tory government or something like that. John Major only bloody won it in 1992. Anyway. It's one of the first elections I really remember properly, I must say. I was like 12 years old or something. I remember it relatively clearly. Okay. On this day in 2003, Baghdad falls to US forces. Ctesiphon. It's not Ctesiphon. The ancient city of Ctesiphon is just outside of modern day Baghdad. Or well, some of the suburbs overlap, I believe. Anyway. George W. Bush's Mesopotamian adventure. On this day in 2003, Baghdad falls to US forces. Ending the invasion of Iraq, ending just the first phase of it, resulting in widespread looting and a years-long sectarian nightmare, lest we forget. Tony Blair and George Bush insisted it made the world safer. It didn't. It didn't, did it? That is the news. That's the show. Let's do the Rumble Rants and Super Chat, shall we? Close the show out with that. All right, let's do this so I can see the left side of my screen properly for the Rumble Rants. All right, we've got... Who do you reckon's in at number one with the first Rumble Rant this morning? Who do you reckon? It's only global church history. And still... he says, on this day in 1626... Francis Bacon died. I came within a whisker of doing an epochs on Francis Bacon. In fact, I probably still will at some point. Francis Bacon, if anyone doesn't know, not to be confused with the 20th century artist Francis Bacon, not that Francis Bacon. There's a 17th century Francis Bacon who's like a philosopher and a statesman. He was like Attorney General and Chancellor, Lord Chancellor of Britain under what, James the First, would it be? Just an important figure from English history. Really quite important, right? An empiricist. Like, so, let's do science a bit more. Let's conduct ourselves by what we really know and can prove is true, rather than like witchcraft or whatever. Okay. Francis Bacon, very, very interesting person. His career ended in complete ignominy, by the way. But all right, on this day, which I didn't know, he died in the year 1626. You say, in 1784, on this day, King George ratified the Treaty of Paris with the US. So that would be King George III, wouldn't it? The madness of King George, that King George. And the Treaty of Paris is where we finally agree that the United States is the United States and not our colonies anymore. I mean, the issue was settled long before that, wasn't it? The issue was settled years before that. But it took years for a final peace treaty to be agreed upon and finally ratified. Many years, isn't it? 1784? Yeah. All right. And on this day in the year 2021, Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, died. Oh, I never really liked the Duke of Edinburgh. I didn't hate him or anything, but seemed like a... it was all right. He said funny-based things, didn't he? He said... I probably can't say some of the things that he said because we'd get copyright struck or yeeted to some of the terms he would use to describe minorities or indigenous ethnic people from around the world. Old-fashioned words. Okay, all right. H. Weldon says, after mentioning the Mahdist Wars yesterday, the River War, the reconquest of the Sudan, would you ever do more content on General Gordon? There is a good book on his private diary of his exploits in China by Samuel Mossman. Okay, so if anyone doesn't know, on Epochs I've got a very long form bit of content all about Gordon. Gordon of Khartoum. Before he was known as Gordon of Khartoum, he was known as Gordon of China. So he's like a late Victorian general and statesman who was sent round the world in various ways to troubleshoot. And just a very, very, very influential, very, very interesting life. And eventually was killed in that Mahdist War. Murdered by Muslims in, I can't remember if it was southern Egypt or in Sudan itself, anyway. That's what made us, the British Empire, decide, right, okay, that's the final straw. That was one of our heroes. We're gonna go and send a full expedition, military expedition. Go all the way to Khartoum, gunships, the whole nine yards. Lancer divisions, etc. Would I do more content on him? Already got a long form piece, but would I do more? I mean, maybe one day, but probably not, because there's so many things I want to do on Epochs, so many things people have requested for me to do on Epochs, that to return to something, it's difficult in my mind to just return to something I've already covered, unless, and I have done it a few times, unless I really, really want to or need to in some way. For example, I've talked about Henry V or like the Battle of Agincourt a couple of times. I've talked about Pompey a couple of times. I try not to return to things because there's just so many things I could talk about. Seems like a waste. Like, it seems like going back on holiday to the same place you've already been, it's a bit of a, I feel like it's a little bit of a waste. You should go somewhere else to get as much in as you can. So I might return to Gordon at some point, but if I do, not anytime soon. But thanks for the interest in it, though. It's a very, very interesting life, least of all the reconquest of the Sudan bit of it. Fascinating life. He's one of those people a bit like Flashman or Sharp, but real, in the sense that he was at the heart of events for loads and loads and loads of years. Anything that went on, not anything, but a lot of stuff that went on, he was there. He was Johnny on the spot. He was involved in it one way or another. I think fascinating. General Gordon, all right. Fortean Barber says, morning, all right? Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. Cheers for asking. Hope you're all right, Fortean Barber. Then you said, Giampiero Gambiasi has reportedly left Red Bull Racing. Oh, right. Oh, okay. This is Formula One, talking about Formula One. Lambiasi has reportedly left Red Bull for McLaren. A sign that Max is leaving, maybe. Quite possibly. Max isn't happy. Anyone don't know? Max Verstappen wants to leave Red Bull. He's not happy. Because the Red Bull isn't that competitive this year. NATO is old hat. Kanzuk should be the move for us. We should let NATO go. I mean, yeah. Sure. We don't need... Well, Britain certainly doesn't need NATO. It's not really in anyone's interest other than some of those countries. Like Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and to some degree sort of Finland, maybe Belarus. To everyone else in the world, it's a pain, isn't it? Including the Americans now. If it's not going to do what it's told, what's the point of it? That's Trump's point, isn't it? That's where Trump's coming from. And again, purely from the US perspective, yeah, you can't blame them. Like, this was supposed to be a tool that we can use to do things, and it's not. It doesn't work. It's broken. We can't use it. So what's the point in it now? As far as we're concerned, the United States. Why would we? Yeah. Okay. TomRat247 says, I don't fully understand what is happening with the Iran deal. I don't think anyone really does. But what I do know is if I wanted to screw over Bibi, it would look something like this. Well, that's a fair point. I never thought about it exactly from that point of view. But I mean, you're not really wrong, are you? I don't think it is what Trump and Rubio and Hegseth want or are trying to do. But if it were, yeah, it would look something like this, wouldn't it? You can imagine Bibi's not happy about it. You can imagine Bibi's like, wait, we're almost there, he would argue, I would have thought. The regime could collapse any moment. We need to get the Iranian nuclear material. I haven't finished in Lebanon, bro. Yeah, you can't imagine Netty is all that happy about it. Okay, that was the last rumble rant. Let's have a look at the YouTube Super Chats. Harry, you have to do that for me, don't you? If you could do that. Engage. Okay, great. Here they are. All right. It's a fair few higher value ones as well. Nice. I'm seeing a wall of orange there. Lovely. All right. Brandon Lucas says, crucially, why are Iran directly claiming southern Lebanon as sovereign territory that's been attacked? The Lebanese government is not in alliance with Iran. I mean, good point. Formally, of course, you're absolutely right. Yeah, it's just that Hezbollah are proxies, kind of undeniably. I don't think anyone would deny it, that Hezbollah are a proxy paramilitary organization controlled from Iran, or at least to some extent, some large extent. So Hezbollah and the Lebanese government are very different things. In fact, the Lebanese government would like to, some of them, get rid of Hezbollah almost as much as Israel would. They see Hezbollah as just a terrorist organisation. You know, like a Christian Lebanese person like Faraz, for example, despise Hezbollah. Hezbollah's ruining my country, Lebanon. So, but it's to do with Hezbollah, isn't it? Not the Lebanese government. But yeah, it does just look odd, doesn't it? It does just look odd. Why is Iran sort of claiming what goes on in Lebanon should be a red line for them in all sorts of ways? Well, it says blah. Brendan Lucas again says, Israel's agreement with the US is that it concedes its foreign policy and other elements in exchange for a qual military edge? Qualified military edge. I think I get what you're saying anyway. An A device makes any edge meaningless, so Israel can always act on a pre-Yom Kippur war basis. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, but I mean, sure. A device, okay. I mean, yeah. mean, the overall point there is, I suppose, the meta point is, will Benjamin Netanyahu do what Trump and Rubio ask him to do? If they say, we really want you, we need you now to just stop, will he? He was making noises yesterday that he wouldn't. Again, that statement I mentioned, he said, we, Israel, will get that nuclear material from Iran, one way or another. That is going to happen. So we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. Anime Chad Party. You always like that name. It's so funny. I don't know why it's so funny to me. Objectively, it's mildly amusing. I find it more than mildly amusing. Anime Chad Party. What? Anyway, cheers for the super chat. You say Trump being a toucan puppet has been blackpilled. I don't know what toucan puppet exactly means, but I get the gist of what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, people accuse Trump, don't they, of being unpredictable. Like people with TDS. They will say, he's so unpredictable, he's the most unpredictable president ever. Da, da, da. He is pretty unpredictable. It's pretty unpredictable. Other than him not going full Bannon on remigration and the stain of the Epstein thing, other than that, I broadly support Trump and MAGA, certainly over the Dems, the likes of Biden or Kamala, of course, no question, 100%, 1,000 times yes. He is unpredictable, so I don't think this is just my TDS showing. He is unpredictable. I said before, that's not necessarily a bad thing for a president to be unpredictable. It's best if you keep the rest of the world on their toes, your enemies on their toes. You don't know what you're going to do next. You're a bit of a madman. I mean, that's what Nixon and Kissinger would very, very deliberately cultivate. Is that you don't know what Nixon's going to do next. So watch out. Right? That's a good play for a president to be like that. So we don't know. We don't know, do we, what he'll do next exactly. No one really knows. You know? Look at the Maduro thing. Came out of nowhere. Well, not nowhere, but they put an aircraft carrier there for a while. But no one knew that raid was going to happen. No one knew this war was going to start that Saturday morning when they blew up the Ayatollah. Nobody knew. Obviously, other than a small number of people inside the planning bubble. Everyone in the world just was like, oh, wow, okay, Trump's done that now. Wow, all right. So there's a fair few more, for decent money from Brandon Lucas. Thank you, Brandon Lucas. Thank you very much, mate. Bloody hell. Appreciated. Okay, two of them. It's one of two. So this is, I'll read them both in one go. You've put murmurings in the State Department. Again, if anyone doesn't know, it's the US equivalent of the Foreign Office. Murmurings in the State Department. Not typical Trump fans are enraged by the position the UK took during the war, which I think you might say is a good thing. Crucial thing here is, what if we are attacked? And then you say, the white paper in 2025 mentioned we have a problem with this country, with people actually willing to fight for it. Yeah, not many people want to join the British Armed Forces. Not recruiting, not lack of platforms. Society cohesion is so poor that this is a written issue. Okay. I'm not sure 100% what you mean by that last bit, because you put the word written in stars as well. But overall, though, the overall point, I get what you're saying. Okay. Yeah, I think the British, well, me as a nationalist, essentially, as a patriot, I don't want to be led around with a leash by the State Department. No, we should have our own foreign policy. We'll have our own foreign policy, thank you. If it were up to me, we'll make our own decision if we want to get involved in your war or not. Thanks. That's what I think, yeah. And of course, it would be nice, wouldn't it, to build a society which isn't completely breaking apart, where you go up to Primrose Hill just to take a photo or two on a nice day and get murdered. where your women folk can go out in at night and you're not terrified they're going to be sexually assaulted or raped. Build a society which is good on some level, and then perhaps, just perhaps, young men might consider fighting for it again. Call that crazy. Nationalism is terrible. Nationalism is evil, evil Nazi. I just don't want my country and people to be annihilated. Is that too much to ask? All right. And Brendan Lucas says, to the geniuses in the chat who say, I haven't seen the chat other than the first 1 minute of this show, so God knows what you're about to say here. You put, to the geniuses in the chat who say, who will attack us? Have there ever been more fateful words throughout history? George Orwell said, we sleep soundly at night because there are people ready to do violence on our behalf. I mean, interesting, yeah. I think of Jack Nicholson in that Tom Cruise movie, where he says, we stand on the wall protecting you. You need us there. You want us there. I mean, it's true. You're allowed to be sort of soft and weak because your country is defended by strong men, morally and physically. And if they're not, look out. Is the lesson of history. Yeah, is the lesson of history. I mean, sure. The question of whether is Iran actually a threat to Britain. Okay, in the main sense, in the broadest proper international sense, no. But there are terrorists. Like, just last year, in 2024, there were multiple cells of Iranian people, Iranian nationals, multiple cells of them, terrorist cells, planning, bombing, mass casualty events in Britain. And they were foiled, luckily. Last year, including one in Swindon. In Swindon, just outside Costa Coffee, opposite the Greggs, near Iceland. Oh yeah, could it get more real than that? Could it get more coming to your doorstep than that? So I'm agreeing with your point here, Brendan. In a normal town in the West Country of Southern England, the police, anti-terror police, swooped to arrest an Iranian terrorist. Put bags over his hands and stuff to preserve the explosive materials that would have been on his hands so they can convict him. Does it get more real than that? That it is, they are actually, who's going to attack us? Those people are going to attack us. So the people in the chat that were asking that, those people. All right. But is Iran going to like send their longest range ballistic missile to fall on London, randomly in London, like a doodle bug? No. No. What about everything I own? They don't do that. Do they want to export terror abroad, including to Britain? Including, like, Wiltshire? Yeah. I think it's a matter of record, isn't it? As a matter of fact. I don't think that was a complete made-up psyop. All right. So there you go. Situation's nuanced to some degree. All right. Anime Chad Party chimes in again here, saying, Epic Fury sounds like an attack from from a crappy, used a more blue word than crappy, from a crappy anime. Epic Fury. Oh, okay. LJNV says, Bo, you magnificent man. Harry cut to camera two. Magnificent man. Bo, you magnificent man. Thank you. Thank you. Aussie here, do you think Anglo-Celts Aussies could have a right to return to boost your native population since others are kicked out of the UK? Melbourne is now just India and China. And then you put screw and an Israeli flag. Personally, yeah, I wouldn't have any problem with people from the Anglosphere coming back to help the mother country's demographic, or help even fight any sort of sectarian or civil war type boogaloo situation, should that arise. Happily accept expats come back, Anglo Aussies and Canadians and Americans. they want to come back and help. Sure, that's my opinion. Got a mass program of remigration, and it doesn't go, it's not pretty, and there's a sectarian nightmare. And yeah, I would accept your help. Mr. Pastry 2010 says, Chuck Norris Epoch. Episode of Epochs, history theme show, all about Chuck Norris. He may even take a break from the afterlife to do an interview in person. He once threw a grenade at 50 men. They all died, and then the explosion went off. Brilliant. I love Chuck Norris jokes like that. I love the fact that Chuck Norris loved those Chuck Norris jokes. These are so ridiculously badass. Like, comically so. They're funny, yeah. Under Chuck Norris's beard is just another roundhouse kick. Or whatever. Or like the second Chuck Norris was born, he roundhouse kicked his own mother unconscious or something. Oh, there's a million of these jokes, aren't there? Like, yeah, they're great. I almost certainly won't do an epox on Chuck Norris, I'm afraid, because I'd try and make it sort of real. Not that Chuck Norris wasn't real, but try and make it proper, solid history. I rarely do anything post-World War II. I have done a few times. A lot of it's ancient history and medieval history. World War I, World War II. Don't often do things post-World War II. So probably not. Well, probably won't ever do a Chuck Norris one, I'm afraid. Well, that would be funny. Okay. Cheryl Hanrahan, yeah, says, I believe that Lady Margaret Beaufort, oh, this is right in my wheelhouse, Lady Margaret Beaufort ordered the deaths of the two princes. Okay, you've got another thing. I'll have to join so I can read your review on it. Fascinating topic. I don't think so. She wouldn't have had... So anyone who doesn't know, Margaret Beaufort was Henry Tudor's mother. She goes on to become the Queen Mother, effectively, after Bosworth. Would she have had... It may well have been in... Well, it would have been in her interests, certainly, wouldn't it? If she wants her son, Henry Tudor, to become king one day. It's in her interests that those two princes die, sure. Granted there. Would she have had the power and influence... The ability to order that, though. I don't think so. I mean, who knows? No one knows. It is a mystery in that sense. Exactly the details of who ordered it and when exactly and how it went down. I don't think so. I think it was Uncle Richard. Uncle Richard was like, these two boys, even though they're my nephews, he argued they were illegitimate. That Edward IV's marriage to Elizabeth Woodville was illegitimate. So they're not princes at all. They're bastards in the literal sense of that. Either way, they're standing between me, Richard, and power. So they've got to go. They've got to go. I think it was Richard, personally. But I have heard that said before, but I don't think she had that sort of power and influence at that moment in time. She's not like a puppet master. She didn't control the Tower of London. She didn't control Richard in any way, shape or form. Anyway, interesting though. Interesting nonetheless. I hope you do sign up and watch my epochs. I'll be doing the Princes in the Tower in not this Sunday, because I'm doing Battle of Tewkesbury and stuff this Sunday. It'll be the following Sunday, maybe the Sunday after that. I'll get to that. Okay. Little Tesla says, I'm getting better at reading compound words, compound names. I always used to struggle a bit with that. Okay, one long word. Little Tesla 9733 says, thank you, Bosif, Boski, Uncle Bo Selector, the ballistic missile. Over the years on Twitter, mainly on Twitter, people give me tons of different names like that. But I like them all. I think they're funny. I think they're interesting. Joseph, very good friend of mine. I don't speak too much anymore. I'm very upset about. He used to call me Bosif. Boski. Uncle Bo Selector. My niece and nephew always used to call me Bozy. Uncle Bozy. When they were little. Okay. Brendan Lucas again says, happy to enrich Lotus Eaters through my Chicken Little proclamations. Thank you. No, thank you very much. Been very, very generous this morning. It's a fair bit of money you've given us there. So bloody hell, thank you very much. Honestly. Great. Love it. Cheers. Can't thank you enough, really. You know, can't really thank you enough. Appreciate it. And it looks like the last one for today, is it? Yep, very last one. Someone calling himself Sex Twister. Sex Twister says, I'm glad to see your morning show is doing so well, exclamation mark. Thank you. Yeah, cheers. It's only because of you guys, the glorious band, the chosen few. Without you, it's nothing. You say, I'm a two-time Trump voter, and this Iran war is the first time I truly feel betrayed by Trump. Yeah. Lot of MAGA. I'm sorry to hear that, by the way, Sex Twister. I'm sorry to hear that, and thanks for the money as well. Half decent amount of money, I appreciate it. Yeah. If I was a MAGA person, like a full-blown MAGA person, I was a citizen of the United States, and I was born and raised there, and I'd voted MAGA, I would feel quite, personally, this is just me, I would feel quite badly betrayed that he didn't go full Bannon on the re-migration thing. I'd feel hurt and betrayed by that. The Epstein stuff, I would have stopped being MAGA, basically. I still support him nominally. Still, through dint of I can't have the Democrats, would still vote Republican, probably. But I wouldn't really be supporting him, not properly. And then now this. Yeah, and now this. Because Trump has done loads, quite a lot of good stuff. Loads of those executive orders he done on that first day. Amazing stuff, just banning trans people from female sports and things. Loads and loads, many, many, many things Trump has done that has been great. Reversed loads of stuff that Biden did, which was insane. But this, if you're one of those people that hated the forever war thing, and he'd always been the not forever war guy, he'd explicitly made statements many times that he wouldn't recreate a Middle Eastern quagmire like George W. Bush did. And now he does this. It might not be. It might not turn out to be an Iraq-style forever war. He might be able to get an off-ramp and finish it in a few weeks or something. Doesn't really look like it, though, at this point, does it? It doesn't look great. So, yeah, to be a two-time Trump voter, and it's the first time you truly feel betrayed. I mean, yeah, I feel sorry for you. I do feel sorry for you. I mean, our government's worse and weaker and more pathetic and more traitorous, though, still, isn't it? Much more. Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's the show for today. It's now... Well, you've got 90 minutes. Got an hour and a half out of me this morning. Don't say I'm not generous. Supposed to be normally an hour-long show. Try and do a bit more, don't I, most days. In fact, we'll try and do more like an hour and a half going forward. That was the one thing as we sat down with Carl and a few of the other people the other day. Try and make it more like an hour and a half than an hour. Most days I'll try and do somewhere in between, if not closer to an hour and a half. This day, today, you got 92 minutes. It has now ticked 32 minutes past 9 in the AM, British summertime, on Thursday, the 9th of April, in the year of our Lord 2026. Thank you for joining me on The Bo Show, formerly Breakfast with Bo, proper name, Breakfast with Bo. The Bo Show. Thank you very much. I mean, really, without you, it's not anything. It's just me blathering into the void. So thank you. I appreciate it. I do hope you join me tomorrow morning. Try and make the best of the day ahead if you can. It's not always possible, is it? I mean, you've got a normal adult life and loads of responsibilities, and you've got to go to work. If you haven't, if you've got any free time of your own, try and make it count. Carpe diem. Seize the day. It's the most valuable thing you've got is your time. You'll never get it back. You'll never get this day back again. Try and let that sink in. You'll never have this time again. It's finite, your time on this earth. It's finite. You've probably got fewer days than you think you've got. Try and make it count. All right, without getting too preachy. Until tomorrow morning, take care.
Hi.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SPINQUEST.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.